Hey, this is Stelly FD with the Startup Chat, and in today's episode, we're going to talk about self-awareness.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best.
Yeah, and we're talking about self-awareness today because at the end of an episode, Stelly and I started discussing this idea that if you're lying to yourself, you're probably screwed. And that really points to self-awareness, because if you're truly self-aware of things and a lot of the stuff we talk about soon, you wouldn't lie to yourself.
So I think that everybody thinks they know what self-awareness is. Do we really need to go into what it truly is, or are we willing to jump right into how to become good at it, when people are bad at it, and how to kind of think of improving your self-awareness?
Yeah, we could jump right in. I mean, at the end of the day, though, like, self-awareness is exactly what those two words mean. Are you aware of yourself?
Right? You know what the funny thing about self-awareness is, so I think everybody gets the concept, but funny enough, obviously not everybody's self-aware. Most people are lacking, in various degrees, in self-awareness.
And I don't think it's a static thing, right? I think you're constantly trying to retune it if you recognize that it's an important thing for you to be self-aware.
So that's one that's very true. It's kind of a constant balance act. And it's also not, some people are very self-aware in certain areas in their life and not in others.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a moving, morphing concept. But the funniest thing about it is that I've never met a person, I think, that sat or thought of themselves as a non-self-aware person. So maybe one of the big tricking points is that I have a hypothesis that most people think they're pretty self-aware.
Well, I mean, it relates to this idea that, that a lot of founders and stuff like that, like, have talked about in the past, but also a lot of people have, which is like, do you know what you don't know? And I think where people get trapped is that whole concept of how can you truly be self-aware if you don't know what you don't know? And so I think people get stuck in the trap of thinking and believing and wanting to believe that they are self-aware. But if there's all these things that they don't know, that they don't know, that they need to know, then they're not truly self-aware.
So let's talk about two things. Number one, what are the risks or consequences of lacking self-awareness in different areas, especially as you're building a business or startup? But then also, how to get better at it, how to avoid it, how self-aware are we, and how do we think about it? How do we practice self-awareness? Let's dive right into it. But what are some of the negative consequences of lacking self-awareness?
I think if you lack self-awareness, it's much harder to get better. It's much harder to improve. If you lack the skill of being able to assess yourself, your actions against something, right? Like usually the self-awareness, I think it's such a broad thing, but one of the categories of it is like even just asking yourself, do you know how you make other people feel? So one of the, talking about risks of not being self-aware, one of the risks to me is like, you don't know what impact you're having on other people when you communicate or when you do certain things, whether it's your actions or words. And if you are unable to be self-aware, then you're probably not even going to bother trying to figure out what the things you say, the things you do, and how they impact other people.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that that's super true. The other thing is that, I mean, there's this, I think that we all have a self-image. This is another thing that I think we miss, is that there is a self-image you create, and there's an ego that you have, and that's constantly morphing. And that self-image and that ego is not reality necessarily. It might in some areas be pretty close to it, and in other areas very different from how other people would describe you. But it is not like we a lot of times get lost in this, like we're fish in a water and you ask a fish, how's the water? And they're like, what is water, right? We I think confuse our self-image and the way we think about ourselves with how we truly are and how other people perceive us. And I think too many people don't make a distinction between those two things and go, well, I think of myself this way, but not exactly sure how other people think of me. I think other people also could perceive me that way, but there's still a question mark. They just think whatever their self-image is what everybody else's image is of themselves. This comes back to feedback loops, right? How many feedback loops do you create and design in your life to test your hypothesis about yourself in certain situations. You know, how much do you ask people, you know, how much do you pay attention at how people react to you? How much do you, how many questions do you ask to people, to prospects, to your founders in terms of like, you know, have you enjoyed working with me lately? Did you think I did well on this task? What is something I need to improve on? What's something that I've been annoying you with? Just asking people to help you calibrate and give you feedback on what you do well or not so well. Finding ways to, and I teach this to salespeople all the time, record yourself, right? Like record yourself when you do sales calls, record yourself when you do sales presentations, record yourself and watch yourself, because that's a great feedback loop. That's a great way to look at, your, have a hard look, and not just how you felt in that moment and what your imaginary perception was of what was going on, but see it on film or listen to it on audio.
Yeah, and I really like that. The one thing I'll say about that tactic is like I'm lazy, so it's just a lot of work to like turn things on, record things, and all that. So so one trick that I do, so I you know, when I forget that or just don't have the time or can't do it, or mostly just don't do it because I'm lazy, is I'll actually repeat parts of a conversation in my head after the conversation, just to see if I could have done better. Especially if I believe that something I said or did had a negative reaction or a reaction that was not what I wanted. And that's been really helpful to me to stay more self-aware. So for example, like if you're in a conversation, just try to remember, like there's always some point where something was just not clicking for the other party or even for yourself. If you just think about that a little bit more after, just for a few minutes, just to see where it went wrong, you're essentially going to be able to improve yourself. But to me, that's just the idea of even thinking about doing that and repeating a conversation, whether it's through recordings or in your own head, and then using that to improve, that's self-awareness. That's active self-awareness. That's actively seeking out how to improve, seeking out problems, seeking out opportunities to change and get better. And it's really weird because when you think about self-awareness, I'm not sure if people think about improvement, but really self-awareness leads to improvement no matter who you are. Like you can, like sometimes all it is like if you said something and you pissed someone off and you didn't know it, all they have to tell you is, hey, you pissed me off when you said that. And immediately you're trying to improve. Immediately. That's what most people think when they do that, unless it was such a heated thing where like you knew you made them mad and that was on purpose. That's a whole different story.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, self-awareness is really the key to unlocking self-improvement and growth. And when you, wherever you lack it, it's probably going to stop you in your tracks in being able to grow or improve. But what about the how do you feel about, there have been people in the past, some of them pretty famous and pretty successful. And we even talked about this, like the reality distortion field. We had an episode where we talked about that. People that seem to lack self-awareness or their self-perception was drastically different from many other people's perception of what was going on in any given moment. And they were, for one reason or another, able to just will that into existence. And I find that sometimes people, I wonder if some people feel that lacking self-awareness and just imagining, like just creating a version of reality that fits your agenda is a great way to get everything you want in life and to make everybody believe what you want.
I don't think those people lack self-awareness. That would be my first stab.
Yeah, because
at
they
it.
Realize yeah. that's going on, right?
They realize the power they have and they're using it. That's all. That's what I call that. They realize they can do that. And even if it's against the grain, like they realize that they can go make that happen. And that's self-awareness in itself, right? So if you say that Steve Jobs had a reality distortion field when you're around him, you're telling me he didn't know he could do that? Bullshit. I think he was doing it on purpose. I think anybody that uses, not I don't want to say manipulation, but influence, right, in that way, they're more self-aware than many of us. They have to be, because like they wouldn't be able to do it. But when you look at them, it actually oftentimes, I think you're correct, it feels like they're not self-aware. It feels like that because you're just like, this guy's insane. Like, does he know what he's saying? But give you another 10 minutes of hearing the shit, you're like, yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense. Right? I totally bought into this.
So who's got the lack of self-awareness there? The receiver or the giver there?
Yeah, I love that. The other thing is, and we talked about, you know, we had an episode where we talked about reputation. And that the reason for that was that we had this conversation with this founder that wanted me to be an advisor. And I, you know, thankfully declined and said, I'll give you advice for free. I don't want equity, because he really wanted me to own equity. And he kept pushing. And eventually he told me, you know, your advice is great, but that's not the only thing I'm going for. I want your brand, right? I want your name on my website, because I'll use that to get some other things I think I can get through it. And I told him, I'm not comfortable with that, because a bunch of people that have worked for you in the past have not been paid. And a bunch of people are not thinking, they're saying you're a nice guy, but they're also saying bad things about you. And I don't want to associate with that, right? And he was like totally blown away by that, totally unaware that that was what was going on. And we had a larger discussion about that. And then that was part of the reputation podcast. For listeners, they can go back and listen to that episode. But the interesting thing there that I want to hone on is that this guy was good enough in asking tough questions when at least that's my interpretation of what happened. When he really wanted something from somebody he felt was important, he didn't just let me go with the no. He really dug into, like, why are you saying no? And he really gave me more honest reasons why he want me on his website and why he want me to own equity. And then when I gave him the brutal feedback of telling him that he has a bad reputation and I don't want to associate with it, he, although you could tell that he had to swallow hard and just, you know, and he was a little shook by it, he ask more questions. He didn't defend himself. He said, you know, I'm super unaware of it. And then he started asking, how can I repair my reputation, and how can I be better at knowing, being self-aware on what my true reputation is? Because I had a completely different sense of what my reputation was. But funny enough, so he did all the right things once confronted with it with me. But it's funny that he never felt the need to do any of this with his former employees. Right? Because they could have told him much earlier than I told him. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you have to let go of people, like, one thing that I do is that I put something in the calendar a month from now, maybe near a quarter from now, and I check in on people. And then I typically ask them, looking back, you know, what sucked about this? How did you really feel about it? What did I do wrong? How do you feel? And I try to get real honest feedback on how we could have done better and how the person really feels about things.
Here's the thing. In my assessment, I think most people, they don't care about people who left or who leave their company. And so they don't even bother to go do this kind of thing that you're talking about.
I also think a lot of people don't care about the opinions of people they find to not be superior to them. So we'll have an intern, but the intern can't bring up an idea in the team meeting. And I'm not going to ask the intern how I could be a better CEO, because it's a fucking intern, right? And they miss on the opportunity. Yes, Sebastian. We have an intern that just walked by.
Nice.
They miss on the opportunity to learn from anybody and everybody, because they kind of rank who they want to learn from and who is not worthy of giving them feedback or helping them out with learning from.
Yeah, that goes to a point that and a thing I want to discuss with you before we end on this topic, which is this. It's not a shifting of direction. It's more of a doubling down on the self-awareness thing. My doubling down on it is related to kind of the stuff you're saying, which is there's this concept that I just have come up with called organizational self-awareness. And to me, and I look for it, like I'm just a student of businesses. I want to know, I take pride in knowing what's going to happen to a business without ever talking to anyone that's running it or working on it. Just like from the outside, looking at their product, looking at their press. And this concept just keeps coming back to me, which is like, so to me, the idea of organizational self-awareness, I can't tell you internally what it feels like, but I can give you some tips. But externally, the way I think about it is like, I love seeing a company. I believe a company is organizationally self-aware when they suck at something and you literally blink your eyes as an observer and they're really good at it. Like the next time you look at them or think about it. You know, and I've seen this over and over again. There's some companies that are just great at this, right? It's like, And that self-awareness of we suck at this and we need to get better no matter what, that's what I'm looking for in companies.
Do you have an example that stands out?
Yeah. I'm going to give a few, and I'm going to call out, I'm going to give one. So I'm going to call it HubSpot. For the longest time in that business since they started, and this is basically inbound marketing, blogging, and marketing automation tool and more. And they're a public company now. But the thing I loved about them is that they built their business selling basically with the sales team selling whatever they could sell, teaching the product team what to build so they could sell it. So they ended up with a pretty bloated and product with a lot of features, which was fine for 2006, 2007, 2008, you know, when they were in their heyday. And then even a couple more years into 2010, they were still fine. And then in 2010, like, I think the products were different and you had to get better at that. And they sucked at it. They sucked at building awesome product. And so they literally took a whole bunch of equity in their company and bought a company, a whole company right in Boston, spent a bunch of money on it, gave the founders there enough clout and enough responsibility in the company. And right now, if you go look at their business, it is a 180 on product from where they were and where they are and to where they are today. And that you can argue about it, but like when you look at their product, look at their business, they wouldn't have got to where they are unless they fixed that thing they just sucked at and put all of it into fixing it. And they did that. So that's probably one of my most classic examples where someone actually succeeded at the self-awareness organizationally.
I would also think like the first company that came to my mind when you brought this up was Facebook.
Yeah, great.
At a company where a lot of times something new would come up and they were very quick in figuring that thing out and either crushing the competition, doing better than them, or if not, being very self-aware that they're not winning and just buying that, whatever they can destroy.
Yeah, let me give a similar example with Facebook. So for a while, they really believed that you could write mobile apps using HTML5 and basically write it once and have it deployed across Android, iOS, and Windows. And there was a whole thing about that. What I loved seeing is related to what you were saying, but what I love seeing is 2 years later after that thesis, once they changed it and everything and the new one started working, which is basically build native apps, Mark Zuckerberg got on stage at like a Tech Disrupt or something and said, we fucked up and we shouldn't have done that. And that slowed us down on mobile, straight up. So he was willing to admit they made a mistake publicly like that as a public company. And you rarely see people do that. Rarely.
Yeah, this kind of also reminds me of an interview that I saw once from George Soros. It was at Google, at one of the Google author thingies, right? And Eric Schmidt asked him, or somebody in the audience asked him about something, I don't even remember, like his strategy in trading or this or that or the other. And his response seemed pretty profound to me at the time, which was, my whole strategy when it comes to investing can be broken down to one simple thing. I have been and I will always be and continue to be wrong about everything. And all I do every day and every minute is try to correct my wrongs. Just try to be a little less wrong in the next hour than it was an hour before.
So good. Yeah,
so good.
That's good. Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of getting better all the time. I think he made it very tactical. Like, there's nobody, like, you can't argue with that description of it, right? It's like, I'm just trying to correct my mistakes, basically, right? Whatever I thought was wrong, whatever I think, you know, I'm just evaluating it on whether it's right or not. And I think if you take that approach, that's actually self-awareness. It's pretty much looking at it and saying, I'm going to assume it's wrong. And assuming it's wrong will enable me to figure out whether it's right.
Yeah, and especially with somebody that is one of the best kind of speculative investors of all time. What, like, a lot of times people think the reason why these people become so good is because they're always right and they know it, right? And they must be incredibly confident, which they are. But what makes him so dangerous and what makes him more right than others is that his model of the world is totally different. He doesn't try to be right. He just tries to be less wrong. And he just assumes everything he thinks, everything he does, everything anybody thinks or does is not the truth or not correct, but it can be more wrong or less wrong. So he's always trying to figure out how to be less wrong. It's just a powerful, interesting way of thinking of things. And a super self-aware one at that.
Yeah, completely agree.
Another person to bring up as an example, and even just the title. Like sometimes I just think of the title of that book, and it inspires me to try to be more self-aware. Is Gandhi with the book that he wrote of like my experiments with truth? To me, title, like if you call your autobiography "My Experiments with Truth," yeah, I already love you. Like this just blows my mind that you thought of calling the title of your life "My Experiments with Truth."
That's right.
It's such an awesome thing, and you can tell throughout his life, all he tried to do is like, how could I live a life that is more aligned with the way I think and the way I act and the way other people, it impacts other people. How can I make this more and more truthful, more and more pure? And describing that as an experiment, not a journey, not a destination, but a never ending experiment in truth. It's just amazing. I don't know. Just thinking about it puts a huge smile on my face and makes me want to be more self-aware, wants me to grow, wants me to challenge myself more in that way, especially in the ways. So let's talk about this. Let me bring up this question kind of nearing the end of this episode. We talked about self-awareness also being kind of a moving target, but also a thing that's not equally spread out throughout your life or different areas in your life, right? So you might be very self-aware about certain things, but not self-aware about other things at all. I've noticed this in myself in that there's certain things that